Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history.
Okay, hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Briser Show with me, Briser, here on Cornwall Revolution Radio and out of grizzlyblogspot.com, where our mammy welcomes you to the best news aggregate site on the World Wide Web. It's good to have your company, folks, and if you'd like to join us in the chat room, click on the HTML5 chat link on the top right-hand side of the page, just below the player of your choice. I'd like to also welcome listeners of Eurofolk Radio. Good to have you all on board, and I'd also like to make it clear to all listening that I reserve all rights to my words, as do my guests. So, welcome, everybody. It's Monday, 29th of March, 2021. I hope you've had a good week. Just a couple of things before we get on with the show. First of all, I'd just like to thank everyone who sent me messages and emails about, I said my cat died there last week, a cat of 19 years. And I got a lot of messages and emails from people, so I very much appreciate it. And you know who you are, so thanks very much for that. Much appreciated. Also, some other news which I think will interest everybody. Our good friend Graham Hart. I only found this information out actually about 10 minutes before we went on air last week. So basically, Graham was arrested again last week. Five police officers came to his door about 10 o'clock in the morning. Graham refused, didn't open the door or anything like that, but they threatened to kick the door in if he didn't open up. And of course, his wife was there and everything, so he didn't want to cause a scene. So again, he didn't assist or resist type of thing, but he went down and he more or less did a repeat performance of what he did the first time, except he kept saying that he reserved all rights and, the usual, is this a civil or criminal matter? Didn't give his name, anything like that. So, Anyway, they held him for about 5 or 6 hours and they let him go. But he has been has to appear in court on the 26th of April. So there hasn't been any kind of media publicity about it. But this is from a website that I saw it was mentioned on. A website I'm sure we all frequent, antisemitism.org. Anyway, Cornish man charged with 5 offences under the Public Order Act. And it just says, a Cornish man has been charged with 5 offences under the Public Order Act 1986. After reports from Campaign Against Antisemitism prompted an investigation by Devon and Cornwall police, Graham Hart, 68, I won't give his address, has been charged with 5 counts of using offending words or behaviour in a programme involving threatening, abusive, or insulting visual images or sounds, which was included in a program service, intending thereby to stir up racial hatred or having regard to all the circumstances whereby racial hatred was likely to be stirred up. The offences fall under sections 22(1) and 27(3) of the Public Order Act 1986. Mr. Hart is bailed to appear at Truro Magistrates Court on the 26th of April. Stephen Silverman, Director of Investigations and Enforcement at Campaign Against Anti-Semitism, said, Graham Hart has been charged with five offences under the Public Order Act. After our reports prompted an investigation by Devon and Cornwall Police, we are following the case with interest. And that's all there is there. I can drop that into the chat room for people and you can have a read of it. So let me do that now. I think there was no warrant, by the way, arrest warrant or search warrant. They took, again, some of his computers. I don't think they took all of them, but they took his main ones. And I think what happened here was that the Wednesday before that, Graham put up a post on the Cornwall Anti-Semitism Watch Facebook page, and he directed it at Tim Dwelly. And I think we know who Tim Dwelly is. He's the councillor down there in Cornwall. And basically said, you know, that he was 2 years since, you know, that he came after him, and Graham was still there, and blah, blah, blah. And he's got information on him, and he's going to let it all out. You know, he's going to tell everybody what's going on. He's going to give his side of the story. The post was taken down about 10 or 15 minutes after it was put up. And then 5 days later, lo and behold, he gets the knock on the door by the police. So coincidence? I think not. I really don't. Can't say for sure, but I'm sure that's what prompted it. And the five counts, allegedly, was his appearance on a couple of radio shows. I know there was a Christmas show that I did on the 28th of December where I had a lot of different guests on, but Graham was on there for a bit as well. I'm not quite sure what he actually said on there, but they did mention that show. They also mentioned the show, it's Giuseppe and Scorpio show, where Graham was, myself and Graham were guests on that one. And I think there was a Dennis Fetcho show that Graham was on as well. So there was obviously things that were said on those shows that upset a few people. Now, I know for a fact that Graham doesn't say anything. You know, he's careful about what he says, but they mentioned nothing about the previous stuff, nothing about his hoax train video or anything that happened before that. So this is definitely a vendetta, as far as I can see, against Graham Hart, without a doubt it is. And maybe Graham, you know, kind of brought it on himself a little bit. Again, I don't know, because we can't really prove, you know, if this Facebook post had anything to do with it, but it seems very likely that it has. So we'll just see how things go with that one, folks. He has said he's due to appear in court on the 26th of April. He's going to deal with it in his own way. He's not too worried about it. Now, the only thing as a result of it, though, his wife was pretty much traumatized by the whole thing, and Graham was kind of shook up about it as well. So Graham is basically, he won't be doing any more radio, folks. He won't be appearing on any more shows. He's actually taken down the hoax train video on YouTube. So if you notice that, it's been taken down from YouTube. YouTube didn't take it down. Graham took it down. And however, if you want to still look at that song or look at the video, it's been mirrored many, many times up on BitChute or Odyssey or one of those other platforms. You can find it on there. So the song is still out and about. It's just that Graham has taken it down from his channel. So, yeah, Graham's pretty much, I could say, retiring from the scene. I think he's just said he's done enough and he can't really do more. He's getting old now and he's, you know, his health is still not the best. And he says he just has to take care of his wife and his family. And I think, you know, we can all understand that. So, you know, we wish him well. And I think, you know, if you want to send him emails, like it's the Graham Hart Show at mail.com. I think he's still at that mail, that email address is still there. If you want to send him any messages of support or whatever, you can, I'm sure he'll appreciate that. So that's the story with Graham. And So yeah, we'll see how that one goes, folks. Obviously, I'll be still in touch with him, and we'll be keeping on top of that one, and we'll keep you informed as to developments. Okay, on with the show tonight, and we have a guest on. We haven't had on for quite a while, actually. It's about a year and a half, I'd say, maybe a bit more. I can't remember when we had him on, but another man who's no stranger to controversy. He's very outspoken. He's down there in South Africa. Historyreview.com is his website. It's Jan Lamprecht. Jan, welcome to the show. Sir, good to talk to you again.
Hi there, Briza. Thank you very much for having me on your show. It's a real honor to be back on your show.
Good.
It's been I think we've all had some quite a time since we've last spoken. But
Yeah,
yeah,
the world has gone a bit crazy, hasn't it? Really, when you think about it. Unbelievable. Yeah.
it's gone insane.
Yeah.
And the COVID and the lockdown from the beginning, I was saying to people that I think this is good. I think COVID, especially lockdown, is so insane that it's really going to stir people up. And then the cherry on the top was the stolen American presidential election. And from the feedback that I'm getting from people and from what I'm seeing, it looks like it's really making these things are making people crazy. I believe there are protests in your country and Europe and so forth regarding stupid lockdowns and all this crap. So the good thing that I was thinking was that doctors and nurses and scientists who have always been quiet will suddenly now come out and start talking about all this crap. And indeed, that is happening, and it's beautiful. It looks like it's really stirred people up.
There's some good positive things happening, there's no doubt about that. I'm still a little bit concerned that there's still an awful lot of people who just cannot see it. And I think what it's done for me is I really now I've kind of separated the wheat from the chaff. And there's like some friends that I know now who just cannot see through this. So I'm just saying, right, I just don't want to be near you anymore, because when we are going to be in the trenches, which could be very soon, I just don't want you people around me. You're going to be a risk to me and my safety, and that's it. So, because if they can't see through this, there's no helping them, you know? I mean, we've been talking about stuff for years, Jan, as you know, about various different things that are going on in the world. And it was very hard to kind of get through to a lot of people on what we talked about, because it's quite deep, and a lot of research is required and all that. So that's a little bit understandable. But this whole COVID thing, it's so easy to see through the lies of this and the deception, you know. And for people who cannot see through it, I seriously, there is no hope for them.
Yeah, I tend to agree on that. I mean, if you can't make sense, if you can't realize that this is almost all complete bullshit, and I still can't get over things like the mask issue, that the entire world is walking around with fucking masks on, for something that is no more dangerous than flu, and in previous times it would have been called a cold, and the interestingly enough, the blacks here in South Africa, they take COVID much more seriously than the whites. It's been a good thing for the whites. Lots of whites have looked at it and said, this is just crap. And that's been a good sign. But the blacks, and you know what? The Jews as well. The Jews also seem to be really into this COVID and mask thing. And they like really believe this. I'm just saying to myself, the only time that people used to wear masks was in World War I when they had gas that was being used to kill them. That is the only time that you actually really needed to wear a mask. You don't need to wear a mask for this clown show thing. Although I must tell you a funny story, Braza. Not too far away from me is a Chinese mall, and I go there to get things for my solar panels and my own homemade solar power stuff. And the one day I went there after lockdown had started, and I found a really nice big wholesaler, and I was inside this wholesaler, and everybody had their masks on. And then I got to the front to pay, and the owner or the manager is Chinese, and that Chinese guy had what I would call a Chinese spacesuit. I actually took a little bit of video footage. I even went back there to use my phone to grab a bit more video footage of this guy. It was unbelievable. He covered himself from head to toe in freaking plastic. He had a proper respirator, like a rebreathing kind of a thing. Oh man, and he was covered in plastic. And you would think that, Ebola was around and we're all going to drop dead, The Asians, here seem to have been quite scared by it, including the Indians. But I see the Jews take it quite seriously as well. The people who are the toughest are actually the whites, actually. And I think it's good.
Yeah, it is. I mean, there's at least when you see, look, when you look at the kind of the protests across the world and everything, it's all seem to be in white countries, you know.
Definitely, definitely.
And then I'm looking at what's going on in Israel. They seem to be really hitting the Jews in Israel with this. I mean, with the vaccines and all the rest of it. And there seems to be a bit of pushback there on that too. And I'm wondering, do they even really care about the ordinary Jew over there now? I'm just wondering because are we just being fed a load of nonsense? I don't know on that, But there seems to be Israel is probably the most vaccinated country in the world now. And then obviously lots of people are dropping
Oh,
dead.
really?
Yeah. And
Nice. Let them be lab rats. Let them be the
yeah.
lab rats.
Well, I, you know, my situation is, well, what's the term? What after what they've been doing to the Palestinians for years, I mean, you get, this is karma coming around, I think, in many ways, isn't it? And they
Yeah.
talk, they're talking about, oh, it's another Shoah, another Holocaust, and blah, 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 Well, you reap what you sow, don't you? So here we are. So yeah, so let's see where it goes, Jan. I mean, what's it been like down in South Africa? I know you had a pretty harsh lockdown there, particularly during your winter. So I was hearing that
Yeah.
so really you couldn't really do anything at all. So
Well,
tell us what was going on there, and how strict was it, and what's
okay.
yeah.
Well, the lockdown started really suddenly, and initially we were told it's just going to be like 3 weeks or something. And it happened very suddenly, and I myself had not been prepping in terms of food for some years, and suddenly I began to wonder whether people are going to panic, and I began to also quickly rush out to buy food in the last day or two before the lockdown came. And to my amazement, for the first time ever, I saw shelves being empty as people were running to buy food. And that concerned me. And from then onwards, right until now, I have since then made sure that every week, even if it's just one extra packet of something, that I keep building up a little bit of stockpile of food. I've got quite a stockpile of food since then, because I began to see that, things can go a bit crazy. And but the initial lockdown was very intense, and and you couldn't move outside. I live in a house in the suburbs, and you couldn't even move outside. Though at a point, and then there was also the issue that the police would come around and the army was out, and I was waiting to see if the army was going to do the rounds. But it turned out, I thought, once I realized what was coming, I was saying to everybody, this is actually going to be a good exercise, almost an exercise in preparation for war, because now you're going to see how good is the government, how powerful is the government at keeping control of everybody. And the first thing that I the in the weeks that ensued, many people were, there were some people who even thought that it was possibly a cover for an attack, and I even knew one or two people who were busy trying to get weapons. There was one guy who very urgently went and bought himself an advanced rifle and had it immediately shipped to him, etc., because he thought, the government can use this to come and kill us. But anyway, I watched with interest, and I've never seen army ever anywhere near me or anywhere at all. In fact, the army only was used in the black townships, and they were really struggling to control the blacks in the townships. And the army even killed a couple of people, and but these were blacks that were killed. I also saw the police doing the rounds in the beginning a little bit, and right by my house. But then after a while, it was very rare for the police to come out. And then at a point, I got a bit naughty, and I decided to see if I could sneak out and about a bit myself. Once they locked you down, I thought to myself, God, this is the most insane thing ever. I'm living in a curfew. The last time I was in a curfew was either in Rhodesia or South Africa when we were at war. A curfew is not normal, and I hated it. Anyway, so I began to be a little bit naughty here and there to see, what you can do. And otherwise, for quite a while, we weren't allowed to do anything. You couldn't go outside walking. You couldn't go running. And in my suburb, in the areas, whites do lots of running, or especially cycling. And for quite a while, for a couple of weeks, that wasn't allowed. Eventually, they started to ease off on that. Once they eased off on it, after it must have been quite a while. I stand to be corrected, but it could have been as long as like 6 weeks or something, before we could really move a little bit. It was really great to get out and to walk a bit and so forth at certain times, and to start exercising again. There was a guy in my suburb, a cyclist who was attacked by blacks shortly thereafterwards. But otherwise, it actually settled down. Most of the problems were from the blacks. The blacks were the ones who were breaking the rules. The blacks were the ones who were among the stupid stuff. Oh God, they went to town. They went to town with the rules. They went and made so many fucking rules. You could only go out to buy food. You could only go out to buy food or get medicine or go to the doctor, and that was it. You couldn't go out for anything else. The initial part of the lockdown, the first month or two, was really nasty, and over and above the fact that you've got to wear a mask, et cetera, and everywhere you go, you've got to get sanitized, you've got to get a mask. Some places it's so bad, like at some places, like if I go to the pharmacy by the place where my doctor is, there at a lot of places they take your temperature, and at that place they make you fill in a questionnaire every time. And there were a couple of places, there are only one or two places where every time you go there, you've got to fill in a questionnaire. They got to measure your temperature. You've got to put it down. You've got to sign it. You've got to put your name, your ID number, telephone number, etc. And that's how those places operate. But all the other stores, you've got to sanitize, etc. The blacks, then the government made all these crazy rules. They then said, okay, some shops can open. Only these kinds of shops can be opened. You can't go to restaurants. Restaurants can't be opened. Fast food shops can't be opened. Those things don't mean anything to me because I don't go there anyway. But then they said that that clothing stores are opened, but you can only buy certain types of clothing. So you can only buy this and that, but you can't buy that. One of the funniest things they did was they immediately stopped liquor. I think they stopped liquor. This was like America in the Prohibition days. So
All
they said they're stopping liquor, and I think it is for partying and social contact, okay?
right.
So they stopped liquor. Well, I must tell you, people almost went crazy, and people started trying to make their own liquor, and people were trying to sell liquor, and blacks nearby where I lived came and broke into a liquor store to steal liquor. And then the biggest brewery in the country had to come up and invent a alcohol-free beer. The liquor part made people crazy. And but after that, it sort of settled down. Nowadays, I don't really worry about it. The latest thing that I've been reading is that one thing about South Africa, or let's call it the new South Africa, is if you want creativity in South Africa, it's South Africa's most creative sector is the crime sector. No matter what happens, criminals are never short of ideas, and these black criminals always thinking up new shit, and they're fast. And the latest that I've heard is that they reckon that South Africa is going to become a hotbed of fake COVID vaccines. That they're going to be marketing vaccines, and they're going to be fake vaccines. Of course, you and I know that the vaccines themselves are weird and shit and not even really vaccines. But anyhow, be that as it may, there's going to be a true fake vaccine that they're going to be selling. Oh God, the criminals also have the ability now to produce certificates. To produce certificates that say that you don't have COVID. Oh man, the endless shit in South Africa, and I only know of, I think I've only had two friends out of all the people I know. I only know of two people who had COVID. The one guy got over it in about 3 weeks. He went to his doctor, got some medicine, and took some extra vitamins and stuff. He got over it in like 3 weeks. He had a black boss who ended up in intensive care. That's how bad he got it. But the white guy, I only heard of one white person through a friend who's died that I know of. But the other aspect of COVID was the massive hit that the economy took. People lost large amounts of jobs, and I also was told that quite a few people lost their houses because of their income losses. Then our Reserve Bank, our central bank, dropped the interest rates a lot. And then I started seeing people adding on to their houses in my suburb down the road. I've seen two people adding massive additions to their houses. So those who've got jobs, they're enjoying it. But it has definitely damaged the economy. Definitely damaged the economy. And the South African unemployment is well over 30%. Well over 30% unemployment, like 32% or so unemployed.
That's huge,
So, but it's always been high because this is Africa. But yeah, so that's as much as I can sort of summarize up to a point. But the bottom line is that they've been saying, oh yes, and then there are people. I must just address an issue about Africa and COVID, you'll see that the statistics from Africa are that COVID hit South Africa hard, but COVID did not hit the rest of Africa hard. Let me just clarify that. South Africa is the only country with first world infrastructure, and much of our medical fraternity includes white doctors, nurses, etc. So our infrastructure is far better than the rest of Africa. So one of the reasons I'm sure why South Africa's got this quotes bad COVID problem is because we're the only ones actually administering the tests, and we're the only ones actually counting.
Yeah, those
Don't
false.
worry. Don't worry with all its false positives. The others just aren't even bothering. Though I heard a very interesting thing, I must tell you before I forget. I have some contact with a black guy from Zimbabwe, formerly Rhodesia, and he told me about a month or two ago, he told me that with the vaccines coming out, that some of the elite communists in Zimbabwe, that they immediately got hold of the vaccine for themselves. Then he told me that after a while, a whole bunch of them dropped dead. And that was quite interesting. I was like, yeah, that's cool. So that'll give you a little bit of an insight into COVID. To me, it looks like it's mostly bullshit, but it does seem to have affected some blacks. There do seem to be some who have really been ill and some who've really actually died. But on the whole, the white community here is behaving much like the rest of you in Europe and Britain and America. It's much ado about nothing. Nobody cares. Many times whites are walking around without masks. They don't care. They think it's bullshit. And it's a good sign, you know.
That's a good sign, yeah. Well, the fact of the matter is that this COVID-19 virus has never even been isolated or anything, so it doesn't actually exist. And I even have a freedom of information request to show that effect, to that effect. So, this is a complete hoax. It really is. And but I think you're right. I mean, they seem to be targeting the Western countries more so than, say, the third world countries, because I notice other parts of Africa, they don't care. Nothing's going on there. I noticed also in Asia as well, and more, the more poorer parts of the former Soviet Union. No one's doing anything over there, so they don't really care too much about them. That's why I think they're really coming after us first, and trying to scare lots of people, particularly elderly. And I think, when you look at the amount of elderly people who have died, sadly, they were literally frightened to death. You hear that saying, he was scared to death. I think they were actually scared to death. And the way they control the whole thing, they're moving elderly people out of hospitals into nursing homes where they weren't getting the proper care or anything, and they died of other complications, other comorbidities and whatever. And so they really do have blood in their hands, the governments here, what they're doing. And now with this whole vaccine rollout, they're kind of putting, the carrot on the stick, saying, oh, you'll get your freedom back if you all get your vaccines and you have your vaccine passports and blah blah blah, But there's a lot of people who were falling for it, and kind of, which is still very frustrating to see that. But I'm seeing more and more people who are kind of going, hold on a minute here, this has gone on too long now. And then they're talking about all these mutant and variant strains. Seemingly there's a strain from South Africa. You've probably heard about that, haven't you? That's spreading all over the world and killing people, Absolute nonsense. Bullshit nonsense. It really is. They're just making this up as they go along. And they just want to
Well,
keep this lockdown thing going and going because they do want to destroy the economy completely and bring in this great reset, which is going to be a total technocratic dystopian nightmare, basically. But I can see definitely that the white man is first in line here to be eliminated here. That's what they want. They want them gone. And that's what I'm seeing. It's perfectly.
I will tell you, this all this bullshit about the South African strains. I've also been reading about the strains here, and the first thing that to me was creepy and didn't make sense is this. My understanding is that once you get this thing, this is like the flu. It's just another variant, and people are going to be exposed to it, and eventually you're going to get herd immunity. And the more people who are exposed to it, the quicker we get to herd immunity. And also newer strains that come in that, it shouldn't affect us much. So what astounded me was when I started reading in the newspapers, oh God, there's a second strain and it's deadlier than the first. I thought to myself, this doesn't make sense. And then the third fucking strain is worse than the second one. And by the way, all this talk of the strains from South Africa and they're worse and so forth, over here nobody's noticing anything, okay? In all my circles with all my friends, nobody's noticing anything. Everyone's going about their business just like before. And the whole thing just sounds like a load of crap. That this is, it's exact, and more proof of it is like the number of deaths in Europe and so forth, the quotes COVID deaths, the quotes COVID death toll matches the death toll from flu. Well, in South Africa we had exactly the same thing. In fact, they said last year was the first time in decades or ever or whatever that South Africa did not have a flu season in our winter. Well, that
Disappeared,
should,
magically disappeared.
yes, so flu disappears and all the death toll is COVID. Ah, the whole thing's just a load of crap, man. The whole thing's just a load of nonsense. And all the rules around it. By the way, here in South Africa, when I was driving, I had to drive to Pretoria a couple of times, and I was noticing people in cars wearing masks, and I thought a bunch of stupid idiots. And then I was told that that if you don't wear a mask in your car, and the police catch you, you can do 6 months jail time for not wearing a mask. And in South Africa, and do you know that even if you're in a car alone, that they say you're in a public space, and the police actually have roadblocks. So then I thought, oh God, no, I don't want to go sit in jail for 6 months for not wearing a stupid mask. So what I do is I wear my mask in some weird ways that allow me to breathe much more easily, because I hate this bloody thing that covers your face properly. And so I pull it below my chin, and I have it around, but it's below my chin in case I see a cop, and then I quickly flip the freaking thing up. But it's all fucking hogwash, man.
It
The
is.
whole
I don't wear a mask at all, Jan. I haven't worn a mask since the whole thing started because I know it's all crap and it's bad for you anyway. You're breathing in your own bad air and it's going to affect your lungs and cause all sorts of problems. So, and I've been trying, when I go in, I've only been challenged three times on it. And I just say, well, I'm exempt because we have an exemption here. If you have a kind of a respiratory disease, you can just say you're exempt, if it causes you any kind of distress. So that's what I just say. And, but then I kind of,
Nice.
I wake people up with saying, particularly these people who are working in supermarkets and everything, 8-hour shifts and whatever, and they've got these things on all the time. I said, you're going to do serious damage to your lungs,
Terrible.
So, and
Terrible.
they're kind of going, oh, right. And I said, just go and research that and get an air quality, a test kit, which you can do, which can test the air quality and just put it under the mask. And it goes down to about 16, 70% oxygen, which is dangerous levels when it should be about 19, 20. It goes down to 16. And there you go. And there's people have done that on videos online. You can see how they actually show the kit, without the mask, the oxygen level is up and around 20%. Put the mask on, it just drops immediately, like within seconds, down to 16%, and it's like, and then an alarm goes off on the machine. Danger. I
That's
mean, come
terrible.
on, So, Yeah, I mean that's and so I'm not complying with this. We have a 5K limit here. We can't go further than 5K or what, 3 miles. I've done it many times. I've never been stopped. No cop cars around. I think it's all fear porn. They're putting it out there in the media that, oh, you'll be stopped and you'll be fined. Blah blah blah. And I'm not. Fuck it. If I get a
Really?
fine, I just return it back. Return to sender. Goodbye. Good luck.
Really? Do you have like a distance thing that you can't travel a
Yeah,
certain distance?
you can't go more than 5K at the moment, and they're now looking at next week. Guess what? Next week we
That's
might bring it
insane.
up to 20K next week. See, if you're good, if you're a good little sheeple, we'll let you do that. Yeah. So these government officials and these health officials, I mean, they're just making this stuff up as they go along, and I think the more they do this, people are kind of seeing through it. I'm just thinking,
Yes.
just the level of compliance, though, among people around me is just a bit frustrating. I'd like to see a bit more fight and a bit more pushback, that's
Yes.
what I'd like to see. Come on, we can do it because our ancestors went through worse, far worse things than this,
It's crazy. Yeah. I mean, if our ancestors had to know that we're wearing masks for a flu, they wouldn't fucking believe it. I mean, our ancestors come from the freaking glaciers of Europe. I mean, that is just insane. Even our ancestors of like 20 years ago, people from 20 years ago wouldn't believe this. I am still finding it hard to conceive that the entire world is wearing masks. I think it's insane. It's the creepiest, weirdest, total bullshit I've ever seen. It's so blatant, and that they destroyed the whole world's economy just for this in such a stupid way. It's beyond insanity. I just can't grasp it how. But
It just kind of shows you the power of the media, though, Jan. How they keep pushing it. They keep pushing it all the time, all the time, all the time, and changing the narrative and just keeping people always just that little bit afraid, And always that promise that, well, if you do this and you do that, we'll give you back your freedom. We'll give you back your freedom, right? Hold on a second. We were always free, well, pretty much. At least we could do things without having to ask permission from anybody, like the government. Now we have to ask permission to go places and do things, So you're kind of going to give that back to us. I mean, who the fuck are you to take it away from us in the first place? So
And
this is what I want to see. I'd like to see a bit more real kind of people kicking us some arses around now and saying, enough of this nonsense. And then let's see them start worrying big time, Because I tell you, if this does come out, I really do hope it does get exposed for what it is, the big hoax that it is, like all the other hoaxes in history. But this one in particular, because everyone's affected by it. That if it is exposed and everyone does eventually get it, that these people who have put this together, who the likes of Bill Gates and all these other idiots, these psychopathic megalomaniacs, they'll be rounded up and dealt with appropriately.
Now you're talking. Now you're talking. I've also been looking at the Bill Gates stuff and where he's like having an orgasm as he says, oh, when he invested in vaccines, the returns were like 10 to 1. And these crazy money-driven people, this is not good for our society. And these, like you say, these megalomaniacs. With money, I must tell you, I regard them as more dangerous than the government. They are really, I wouldn't be surprised if Bill Gates is driving a large amount of this narrative. And that's why, like, unfortunately, like I say, in South Africa, we have to wear masks if we go in public. It's a law. And so you'll get 6 months jail time straight away. But, like I say, I do the best I can with my mask because of I agree with you on that oxygen thing, that oxygen deprivation thing, very bad for you. I've been reading that people also say you get more gum disease. And somebody else I saw actually did some investigation on the fibers that you are breathing in from these
Right.
cheap masks, that that's also going into you, and a lot of it's actually plastic.
That's right, yeah.
I mean, this is totally fucking abnormal. And then the other thing is the vaccine that's not a vaccine, that's a DNA thing, this mRNA. I saw a video where an American doctor was saying that what you've got is that this isn't a vaccine. It doesn't do what vaccines do. And what this is a form of gene therapy. And they're changing your DNA, and there's no way to reverse it.
That's right.
And animal tests previously had shown that this thing kind of stimulates your immune system and overstimulates it. And in animals, I believe that after a year, the overstimulation causes the animals to die. So, all these things are very weird and creepy, and it's been rushed to market, and it's being rushed to people to take it. I have said from the beginning, I'm not taking any fucking vaccine, no vaccine at all. I
No.
don't care what they do, I don't care what rules they implement, I will not take a vaccine. End of story. I'm not letting them fuck with me. I don't know what's in there. I'm not a lab rat for Bill Gates or
Yeah, it's not,
anybody
it's an
else.
experiment. I don't want to be involved in an experiment. Thank you very much. So goodbye, you know. I think there's a lot of people that, and you can see now what they're doing, like what they're calling people that are anti-vaxxers now. They're all white supremacists. I mean, what? I mean, it's just getting beyond an absolute joke now. They're all anti-vaxxers, far right, white supremacists, well, homophobes, all of, they're all the one, and we have to deal with these people, No, we've got to deal with you. Yeah, fucking, I tell you,
Well
this.
said.
Yeah. Anyway, it's we'll see where it goes. I mean, they're gonna keep pushing this, but I think I really am hoping that somewhere along the line, people will snap out of this and see through it. I'm still not seeing real signs of it yet. I'm seeing some signs of it, but not I just want to see that critical mass, I think a lot of people probably can see through it, but are afraid to say things. And again, it's that fear of speaking out, you know what I mean? They're afraid to say things in front of their family, even or their workmates or stuff like that. And people need to be brave now and just call them out. Just call them out. What the hell? Let's just do it. People are afraid of losing their jobs, and I can understand that. But I mean, they're not going to have any jobs in a couple of years anyway. So why not? Say it. Let's do it now.
I must tell you that I think that in the 2020s we are living through the 1930s. I think we're in that particular space, and that we're heading into nasty, nasty things. Because I think that with all these economic problems and all these issues, you're going to have social issues, lots of stuff. And interesting about the white supremacist type of view, but it is the whites who are pushing back more than anyone
And that's
else. The
it. That's why
whites
they're
are
doing that.
calling it out,
Yeah, that's why they're doing it, because obviously a lot of people who are concerned about whites, where we're going as a race of people, they're obviously are well awake to what's going on. So they're a lot of them are speaking out, and a lot of them would be at these protests, right? But then you've got just the ordinary people who haven't really got a clue about this stuff, but they know that this is a complete fake, this is a joke. And they don't want any vaccines, and they're waking up. So, I mean, at least, I'm not one for protests, but at least when these people meet up at these protests, they can get a big good network and wake up the kind of normies who don't know stuff that we know, but they're on board with the whole vaccine stuff and all of that. And we can actually jump in there and say, well, have you looked at this and this and this, and let them join the dots and realize there's a much bigger thing going on here,
I do agree. I think that once people are red pilled, all paths start leading to other things. The most important thing that I've noticed about whites is Once a person realizes that he's been lied to about something important, whatever that may be, whether it's the Holocaust, whether it's 9/11, whether it's JFK, whether it's COVID, whatever it is, once a person has realized he's been lied to on a big scale about something important, from there onwards to then ask the question, if they lied to me about this, could they have lied to me about that? That kicks off the process. And the other thing is, in like about 2 weeks' time, it will be a year since this started. And I don't know if you've
That's all
seen.
already a year here, because it was a year here 2 weeks ago,
Well,
that's six here.
I don't know if you know, I don't know if you know this, but here in South Africa, our president Ramaphosa, when this stuff started, when he initially announced, I think it was a 2 week lockdown. When he initially announced it, I think it was in the middle of April to the end of April. And then there was some journalist who was with him in his office with his secretary, and Ramaphosa made a joke. He thought it was a funny joke, but it pissed people off. So listen to this. So Ramaphosa makes this joke and he says, I said that the lockdown is until the end of April, but I didn't say which year. And at that time, people were very hacked off about it. They were saying, like, what the fuck? You are fucking up the economy and you're making a joke about it. But look at it now. We're into the next year, and it may be another year and another year. So in a sense, did he know something that that this thing is gonna last a long time? And the little video of that is out there. You can go find it. It is quite nasty. So I mean, this thing is totally stupid. I mean, how can we carry on like this? Are we still going to be wearing masks 5 years from now?
Well, that's what they want, even if they say when, even if you get the vaccine, this shot, this kill shot, you know what I mean? And you get your vaccine passport or whatever, you're still going to have to wear a mask and socially distance and all this nonsense. So, what's the point then? Why can't people at least see through that? Well, the whole reason why I was supposed to get the shot is so I don't have to wear a mask or social distance, and I can do, I can travel wherever I want and do what I want. No. You still have to go by our little regulations here, So it's farcical. It really is. It's a
It's
joke.
insane.
It's just insane. But we're, clown world. Here we are. We're right in the middle of it. So
Well
this is
said.
where it goes, I tell you, like. All the other stuff that's been going on in South Africa, which we've talked about before, like the farm murders and the land expropriation, has that been all been put on hold through all this nonsense, or what else is happening there?
I was following farm murders a bit more closely last year. They're killing about at least one farmer a week. And there is still some kind of pushback. There was an interesting incident that took place at a police station. Oh, yes, there's something else I must tell you that's related to farm murders. I don't know if I told you, but do you remember in 2017 in the town of Kulini? The blacks were attacking the whites and were trying to set houses on fire.
Yeah, I think you were
And
telling me that.
there was quite a lot of nasty violence in Kulini. So during that time, there was a very strange incident that took place where two young white guys who were working for a farmer had caught a black in their maize field. They'd caught a black in a field, and he was stealing their crops. So they put him on a truck in a pickup truck, and they drove him off to the police station. And on the way to the police station, he falls off the pickup truck and he's dead. Then in this racial climate, the blacks now come, and the blacks say that that they saw him being thrown off the truck, he was beaten, etc., etc. So the next thing was these two white guys were accused of murder. And a friend who lives in Kulini and knows inside information told me within a few days that in actual fact, what had happened was he had jumped off the truck. He jumped off the pickup truck when it came to a stop because they were taking the guy to the cops, and he jumped off and he miscalculated and he fell and he broke his neck. And that they actually had an autopsy within a day. They had an autopsy and they said that it's a given he'd broken his neck. Nobody touched him. There are no bruises on him. Nothing else happened to him. Anyway, the blacks came and they invented a whole story. They invented a whole fucking story. Eyewitnesses. They said they saw this. They saw that. Anyway, those two guys were then found guilty of murder in the magistrate's court and they were thrown in jail. Well, it took them 2 years and they had to get other attorneys and advocates and they had to take and they had to appeal the case in the high court. And those guys got out just a couple of months ago. Those two white guys came out a couple of months ago. It was proven in the high court that this guy wasn't murdered by the whites. There were no marks on him, etc., etc. But they'd had to spend 2 years in jail. You know, the whole thing was trumped up on racial crap at the time and so forth. So at least there was something good that came out of it, but it's nasty. You know, really nasty thing. And I don't know if you know, there was another case. I also heard about this recently. There was another case a couple of years ago where some whites on a farm took a black that was irritating them, and they took a black and they put him in a coffin. They just put him inside a coffin and just closed it a bit, and that was that. And he wasn't hurt. They just put him in a coffin, scared him a little bit, and so forth. Anyway, those guys were also, I think they were thrown in jail or whatever, and I believe that they also had a long legal battle and they also managed to finally get out. But you know, if you touch any of these people, if you touch any of these people, it's like the Jews and it's like the Jews as well. You know, you touch any of these special people in the slightest way, they quickly find a way to get you chucked in jail. So it's pretty nasty. You were saying something else other than farm murders? Oh,
Land
land seizure.
appropriation, yeah.
Now
So,
that's an interesting thing. There are two nasty laws. The one is the land expropriation. Interestingly enough, that one's been sort of on and off. I believe. I'm not quite sure, actually. To be honest with you, I haven't looked in recent months what's been happening there because that thing looked like they were going to do this thing. They were going to do it, I think, in about 2019. And then it seems there was like some kind of pressure on them to hold off on it. And I've been hearing about it again, but you know, they also lie about things and they hide things, and you don't really know what goes on. And the mass media, as usual, does a very poor job of this. So, to be honest with you, I was very concerned about it, but in the last year or so, I've kind of lost touch with it and I haven't followed up on it. There is a guy that I met in Pretoria who did tell me that his property is due to be expropriated. But it's not just a slam dunk, and there is something more to the process where you can do something. I think there are situations where they can get money. You know what? There's so much confusing shit then you don't know for certain what is going on. And you also don't know how much of the confusion is deliberate so that whites don't get worked up. But that's as much as I've heard about that. Another thing that I know about that is concerning me is that the Jews, a couple of years ago already, the Jews and the gays had basically composed a very nasty hate speech law, a hate speech law for South Africa that is so horrible that when this thing comes into being, it is really going to be problematic for everybody, and it's going to make it maybe impossible for people like me to function. And this hate speech law, they wrote it up, but it is still being debated and worked on in Parliament. And it looks like there are people who are trying to, whites who are trying to get this thing made more workable, because if it goes in its original Jewish form, it will just be insane. Everybody will be able to take everybody else to court in no time at all. The courts will just be overflowing with hate speech stuff. So that
Some of
hate
that private
speech,
crap in here too, by the way. I'm trying to bring that in here as well.
that is scary shit. That is really scary shit. And that thing is something that I'm watching. They are trying very much. All these bloody things, I must tell you, honestly, these things are insane. And you call it clown world, and I agree with you. It's clown world, but it's a very evil kind of clown world. And
Oh, yeah.
it's becoming so that no white man or woman can function anymore. It's really dreadful.
Yeah. Right, yeah, and we're just on the hour mark, though. That was a very quick hour. We've a lot more to talk about in the second hour. So what we'll do is we'll take a quick break here, but just under 4 minutes. And we'll talk more with Jan Lamprecht, historyreview.com. So the song I'm going to play is a great Scottish band called Albanach, and a song called Claymores. Of course, it's the great Scottish swords. So lads, we need to start sharpening our claymores here because we might be needing them pretty quick. So anyway, I played a song, good song this one, and we'll be back to you in about 4 minutes.
But we will fight you to the end. laughing apart, and how we stood against her. Down to the last, think on friend and kinsmen, rather left behind. Honor's God and glory, that fought to find. So hold your claymores, hold up high. To break our will, you can try.
Okay, welcome back, everybody. This is Briser here on The Briser Show. That was Albanach and Claymores. Hope you enjoyed that one. Special guest this evening, Jan Lamprecht in South Africa. Jan, welcome back.
Yes.
Right. You just said you have something fascinating to tell us about Muslim wars in Africa. Tell us more.
Yes.
What I'd like to also talk about as well, Jan, you put together a documentary, which is on your website, historyview.com, about Dr. Hendrik Verwoerd, who was South African Prime Minister from 1958 to 1966 when he was assassinated. We'll go into a bit about that. I know it's kind of a work in progress because you're doing a kind of a part two on that one. And maybe at some point in the future we'll do an actual show on it, because there's definitely a show there without a doubt. But we'll kind of talk about that a bit too. But anyway, tell us about this Muslim wars in Africa. What's going on there?
Okay. Well, this is something that has really this has been something that I started studying a bit on and off as best I could, because information is not good. But there have been some there's been an offshoot of 9/11 that is totally buggering up things in Africa. With America going off to do all this killing of Muslims for the benefit of Israel and Jews, this has resulted in a very strange situation. The blacks of Africa, in the days when they were getting all their free countries from Britain and elsewhere, The blacks kind of imagined that, you know, the only issue that they face in life is the white man. That once the white man is out of the way, that life is going to be great forever after. Well, the one thing that I never saw coming, and the blacks definitely didn't see coming, is the notion that if the Muslims are at war and the Muslims are struggling and they're fighting, and the Americans busy crushing them in the Middle East, that the Muslims would actually start looking at Africa and saying, but, you know, there's some easy pickings in Africa. And that in Africa, there are also some black Muslims. So initially, this started out as a religious war in Nigeria, which used to be a British colony. Mm-hmm. And Nigeria is actually the most populous black country in Africa. And initially it started out as a Muslim battle between the black Muslims and the black Christians. And they even brought in white mercenaries to defeat the Muslims. But they never quite defeated them, and it seems that the war continues to rage on. But what has happened now is that more and more of this war has been spreading to more and more parts of Africa. It started in the west of Africa, and it's moved to the east of Africa. But the thing that just about blew my mind was the discovery several months ago that the war has actually spread to a neighboring country here in southern Africa, Mozambique, which used to be a Portuguese colony. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that there's some black Muslims in the very far north. And in the very far north, there's also very valuable, I think it's oil or coal. And these blacks got sponsorship from ISIS, it seems. And these blacks have started fighting in the north of Mozambique. So you've got a tiny, it's like a tiny little black Muslim army. And all these black countries, by the way, all of them who are fighting these guerrilla wars, the blacks themselves, when they fought against the whites, used guerrilla and terrorist tactics. Now, the blacks, you know, those of us who fought against them, we whites have spent a lot of time saying, you know, could we have fought these terrorist wars better? Could we have fought the guerrilla wars better, etc.? Something that I discovered some years ago was that there was a precursor to these Muslim terrorist, Muslim guerrilla wars in Africa, and that was in the time of apartheid. In the time of apartheid, there was a short period of time over a couple of years where ex-Rhodesians in South Africa plus the South African military decided to try and send some black terrorists into Zimbabwe. And when I investigated that more deeply, I discovered to my amazement that the Zimbabwean army and government could not defend themselves against a couple of black guerrillas, as crazy as it seems. You know, the whites were busy fighting guerrillas and terrorists everywhere, left, right, and center. But what happens when you turn the tables and the blacks are in charge of the government and the army, and they have to defend themselves against black guerrillas? And do you know that they're totally and utterly useless? They can't do it. So what happened in Zimbabwe was, in order to fight a handful of terrorists, the government actually went and just massacred tens of thousands of blacks. They killed like 30,000 blacks because they couldn't find the terrorist. So they then just killed everybody. Anyway, now, with the Muslim terrorists, it's sort of similar. These black countries cannot find the terrorists. They cannot find their own guerrillas. They've got an army and a government and everything, and they can't find them and they can't fight them. And tiny, tiny groups of black guerrillas are defeating and are defeating armies in Africa. And, you know, the French and even the Americans are the ones who are actually fighting the most to try and stop these black countries from collapsing and being defeated by black guerrillas. And you know, if you had to see the scale of which of the guerrilla wars that the whites had to fight against, you know, it was massive. But yeah, the blacks can't even defeat a tiny handful. Now, what really became very fascinating was this discovery that it's now moved to Mozambique, which is on the east coast. And Mozambique is a country that borders on South Africa. Mm-hmm. And it just amazes me. A handful of them have managed to capture a couple of little villages and towns, and the war isn't even a big war. Only about 2,600 people have died in the last 2 years. But do you know that they've displaced hundreds of thousands of blacks? Hundreds of thousands of blacks have fled from this tiny little army, and the government itself can't defeat it. Do you know that they've even brought in some ex-Rhodesians and South Africans, white men, and they've white mercenaries, and they've bought them, they've brought in some helicopters and things, and a tiny handful of white men with helicopters are the only force that are actually capable of fighting against these Muslim guerrillas. The situation is getting ever more serious. Now the Mozambican government is asking the United Nations to come and fight their tiny guerrilla war. The South African army and government is watching this teeny weeny little war. But I don't think South Africa wants to get involved because the guerrillas might fuck up our army. This entire thing is so insane. It shows you the weak, pathetic, useless nature of these black countries that replaced what was there before. Mm-hmm. And it just amazes me. The military incompetence is just beyond all imagination. The Americans are even going to start assisting Mozambique to try and fight this. I wish to God that the Western world wasn't so pathetic and weak and Judaized, and that they would leave these black nations to collapse. Mm-hmm. Leave these bloody places to collapse in a heap. There is so much positive stuff that can come out of it. I must tell you, my jaw just hangs. I can't believe the madness that is involved in all of this. And if they leave these guerrillas, these black Muslims who are funded by Muslims in the Middle East, they could end up taking over most of Africa. The blacks.
Well, there are big problems up in Ethiopia now at the moment. I've been seeing some news feeds from there. I'm not sure exactly what's going on there, but there's a lot, you know, there's obviously different factions fighting, and of course a lot of innocent people are getting involved, you know, they're getting killed. And, you know, again, the UN say, oh, we got to intervene and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I don't know what's happening there. But of course, that's up around near Somalia and all those areas where there's a heavy Muslim presence. So there's obviously a power play going on there, by the looks of it. Have you looked into that yourself?
In Ethiopia, it's not so much an insurgency. In Ethiopia, it is more one elite fighting another elite. Mm-hmm. The country. By the way, while we're on that, I might as well head into another topic. And that is that it looks to me like we are in this century, in this very century, in the next decade or two or three, you are going to see black countries falling apart. Mm-hmm. You are going to see countries actually splitting apart. Ethiopia's on its way. The Congo is definitely set for that. Mm-hmm. And South Africa itself is heading down that path. You are going to see the collapse of a number of black countries in Africa. A lot of countries are going to fall apart. They're going to break down along tribal lines. Give it another decade or two or three, and you're going to see countries physically splitting up. And lots of them are heading down this path. Zimbabwe is heading down this path. I'm telling you, Africa, if everybody believes the liberal Jewish lie that Africa is going to be better off once the white man is gone, give it time. You are going to see more and more war and conflict and collapse in Africa. Mm-hmm. All these nations that were given independence on a plate, they're falling apart, and blacks are killing each other. I personally am delighted by it. I'm very delighted by it. And I'll just end by saying I posted something on my website the other day where I said that as far as I'm concerned, we've seen the peak of black power in Africa. That black power in Africa peaked about 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And that includes South Africa. And the path forward is only downhill, and it's irreversible. Nobody on earth will be able to stop this, including the United Nations, including the United States, including Europe. Nobody will be able to stop this. This process is totally irreversible. All of Black Africa is going to devolve into warfare, warlords. It's going to break down. Countries are going to be so dysfunctional. They're going to be even more dysfunctional than they are now. And yeah. As it is, Africa's already been sliding behind and falling behind the rest of the world.
The only problem I have with that is that we're going to see masses of refugees now flooding into Europe. That's the only downside to that, you know, which has already been happening for quite a while now.
Well, people are going to have to reevaluate all the liberal crap about Africa. My own view is that what you're going to need is you're going to need some kind of white presence, and that the whites of Southern Africa need to be strengthened. I must tell you, if these things don't happen, it's going to be so fucking chaotic. So myself, as an enemy of black rule, I am just absolutely delighted by all this. I'm just totally over the moon by this. Yeah. I love this. I'm so happy to see this. When I think back to how functional the white countries were in Africa, in Southern Africa, and all of us had to be destroyed, I have absolutely no sympathy at all for the blacks and what's coming.
Yeah.
So I'm very pleased. I still think the white man can carve out something in Africa. I really believe it. Mm-hmm. And but it can only happen if the Western world looks on Africa differently, and if they start realizing that Africa's going out of control and you need some sanity somewhere in Africa again. You need to increase that white presence.
Yeah, well, they've had 50, 60 years of what they call independence, right? And they haven't really done anything with it. And you can kind of say that the bankers moved in there and started taking their resources and all the rest of it, and they installed these tin pot dictators who just kind of went along with the whole thing and just took what they wanted and just treated their own people like dirt. So, you know, but that's not our problem. It's not our problem. You wanted independence, so right, you got it. That means you have to get up and get out there and do it. Make your countries, you know, build up your countries and whatever and create employment, blah, blah, blah. And you didn't do it. And, you know, you all want to come over to Europe now when you're kind of screaming and shouting about we want our own black countries and our own black nations. Well, that didn't work out too well for you, did it? And it's going to get worse, as you said.
Well, all I can say is that the Europeans must just line up the machine guns on the shorelines and sink the ships, blow them up, just stop the hordes from Africa. Whatever happens inside Africa, the blacks only have themselves to blame. No white people were involved in this.
Yeah.
So you know, them wanting to flee, just set up the machine guns on the borders and take care of business. Mm-hmm. The Western world is going to have to – whites, this will be yet more pressure on the whites, and maybe it will help to, you know, just like BLM and Antifa were in America last year, maybe all these things will force more and more whites to relook at the situation of what it is that they voted for and believed in. And that what I want to see is I want to see the white presence in Southern Africa strengthened. That's what I want to see. And I want to see whites in South Africa actually getting some kind of recognition and assistance from the Western world, because that is the only hope there is. Yeah. And I see it as a potential opportunity. Let me put it that way. Yeah. That it needs a bit of negotiation and stuff, but something needs to fucking change, because this entire ship is just going to hell in a handbasket. Yeah. And you're going to see some wild shit coming. Mm. But they deserve it.
Yeah, that kind of segues nicely into this this documentary that you put out about Henry
Ford.
Yeah. Very interesting man. And you call him South Africa's version of Adolf Hitler. And, you know, he actually makes some very good points in it, because pretty much what he was implementing in South Africa was pretty much what was going on in National Socialist Germany. And he called out the Jews, and he basically said that complete separation of the races is the only way you're going to have peace here. And he also said for the white people, get up off your arses and get out there and work, and don't be relying on black servants and stuff like that. But of course, a lot of the opposition to that from others, you know, even, you know, fellow Afrikaners and whatever, they still wanted their servants. I said, no, no, if we want to do this right, we have to take care of our own people and do these things ourselves. So that means we're going to have to be white people out there emptying the bins. There's going to be white people out there cleaning the toilets and white people out there doing all these different things. And let the blacks go off to their little places, their wherever they, the republics that they set up for them, and let them do their own thing. We do our own thing here.
Yes, Favort is a fascinating character. And I don't know how many, I put out three versions of three parts to it so far. So I assume you've watched only the third part, but there's a fourth part, a fifth part, and a sixth part coming as well. Yeah. And in part number four, we will focus on the Jew who actually killed him. This is actually the greatest secret in South African political history. His death is the JFK of South Africa. The only difference is that you don't know who actually plotted and masterminded it. And nobody knows this except a very tiny handful of people in South Africa. A very, very small handful of people actually know that it was actually a Jew. A communist Jew who was behind all the assassination attempts on Favort.
Well, I heard he was a Greek guy, but I didn't know he was a Jew. I didn't. It's very hard to find that information, but you know that for a fact, do you, that he was?
Well, let me explain. The official story is that there was one guy who shot him who was an Englishman, white Englishman, and the actual killer was a Greek guy. Mm-hmm. The reality is that both of those guys were actually controlled by a Jew. You'll understand the Jewish link to this thing more fully when I put together when I release the fourth one, which will be in about a week's time. Yeah. But it's a very fascinating story. It's like almost getting a chance to see who was behind the JFK assassination kind of thing. And just pardon me for a second. I need to sneeze.
That's the COVID. Oh, God.
Yeah. I've sort of got it, and it's sort of here. And if I cut off, then you know that I've had to sneeze. But anyway, it's the story behind the story. It's a book that was totally and utterly suppressed, but that's coming out next. But regarding Favort in general, he was actually a Dutch guy who moved to South Africa. And he spent some time studying in Germany in the 1920s. And he definitely must have picked up some National Socialism and various other values. And he became a professor. He was a highly intellectual guy. And then at a point, the Afrikaners started using him and bringing him into politics. And they made him the editor of a newspaper. They created a special newspaper, and he set about basically he was basically doing the sort of internet of his day as the editor of a newspaper, starting to wake people up, etc. He was very opposed to Jews from Germany and Europe coming to South Africa. He and other professors were totally against it, and they openly stated it. Mm-hmm. And he also, among the things that he did was he noted that Jews were controlling the economy. They were controlling the economy of South Africa 90 years ago. Mm-hmm. And he noticed that, you know, Jews control the businesses. They've got monopolies. They control all the big businesses. The English speakers have got less control. Mm-hmm. And then the Afrikaners have got even less control. And he set out to say that You need to take away the licenses from the Jews when a Jewish business license when a Jewish business license expires, that it should be handed to an Englishman or an Afrikaner until all whites are equally represented in the economy. The Jews absolutely hated him. They hated him like crazy. But he was Jew-wise, and he was like probably the only leader in the history of South Africa to stand up to the Jews and actually openly talk about them. And they absolutely hated this man. But he was a very high intellectual. He was a sociologist. He studied people. He was a professor of sociology and psychology. He knew about people. He knew how to handle people. And he said that, the only way to handle the racial issue is you've got to divide these people, you've got to give people their own spaces, and that's the only way forward. And of course, the Jews hate that because they want multiculturalism,
Course.
and they hated that, and they managed to turn most of the non-whites against him. But he was fantastic. I must tell you, he went to tremendous lengths to unite the English South Africans, who are basically from Britain. He was trying to bring all white people together. It was a magnificent effort by this man to take the Afrikaner and the Englishman and to say, listen, the country is white. It belongs to us jointly. And everybody must work and do their part. And his efforts at racial unity, especially after the terrible events of the Anglo-Boer War, where the British genocided the kids and burned down the farms and killed millions of animals, that Jewish project, let's call it the Jewish project known as the Second Anglo-Boer War, the Rothschild Project. Well, he came and he mended, he tried to mend the relations between the races, and he went to tremendous lengths to bring the English together with the Afrikaans speakers and the Boers. A truly magnificent man. He was a total racialist, and he did his utmost. You will not be able to fault him racially as to what he was trying to do. And the only part of the quotes white community that hated him were the Jews. Everybody else was happy,
But indeed, the Jews did have a lot of clout there, Jan. The Anglo-American, which is the biggest corporation there, which has controlled all the gold mines and the diamonds and all that, De Beers, totally Jewish run. And they ran all the media as well there. And it's the same playbook all the time, isn't it? No matter where you go, they run everything. And of course, you talk about this guy, Stephen Godson, who used to be one of the top men in the South African Reserve Bank, and he died a few years ago under very mysterious circumstances. But he was quite outspoken on this too, and he knew about Vervoorde too. And he understood that Vervoorde knew about the banking system and about usury and all the rest of it. And he was going to change things there. And I think that's what really got them. Just like when JFK was saying that, we've got to change the banking system and bring it back under the control of the people. And just like what Hitler did in Germany too, same thing. See, once you go there, that's the real source of their power. That's their energy source. And if you go and try and meddle with that, they'll come after you. And that's what they did here. So, Vervoorde was, as far as they're concerned, he was a target, and sadly they took him down. But there we go.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you on the JFK thing as well. JFK wanting to issue his own currency via the treasury and stuff. There's your death sentence right there. So the moment you tackle that big, enormous scam, you're a goner, man. It's like same thing as Hitler. The whites as a race are devoid of true leaders. And when you get the rare true leader like Hitler or Mussolini or Verwoerd, the Jews go out of their way to destroy you, and if need be, destroy your country and kill you.
They will not stop. These people want their pound of flesh. They want their economic monopolies and massive control of the most critical parts of your economy. They demand it, and if they don't get it, they will work to destroy your nation. And that is part of why the whites of South Africa, you know, were the pariahs of the Western world, just like the Germans were. You know, same thing. It all boils down to the same old crap, exactly as you say. It's a repeat of everything.
Yeah, indeed. And you said he had a very interesting background. You said he studied in Germany in the 20s when all this was kicking off, when Hitler was getting the whole National Socialist thing going, and he could see what was happening in Germany and what the communists were trying to do at the time, just after World War One. So obviously he could see what was happening. So he learned a lot, and then of course he went back to South Africa, and he kind of implemented these policies, or he was obviously thinking about this, you know. And then when he got into power, he did start implementing this, and he just looked at the situation, and he said, okay, we're in a minority here, but we have to split the races up or else we're going to be in big trouble. And he was right, because look at South Africa now. It's a total mess. So he was right. He was vindicated. Everything he said.
Absolutely.
It's the liberals and whatever, they'll say, oh, well, he's this evil man, oh, blah, 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 you know. Well, tell me what did he say was wrong? I mean, the guy was right. He was blunt. He said it straight out. There you go. Here's your choice. And it seems sadly that he didn't get as much support from his own people, though. Is that, am I right in saying that, or was he really popular back then, or what's your take on that?
He was very popular back then. He was definitely very popular among the whites. He was very popular.
But there was some who were trying to take him down, just like I say what happened with Hitler, wasn't it? The same kind of thing. There was always a few bad eggs in there.
Yes, there were a few bad eggs, but you'll find that all the bad eggs were linked to Jews, all of them. Even that Englishman who went and shot him, he was linked to Jews. He was all part and parcel of that liberal business kind of outlook. And so the one guy who did it was Pratt, who tried to shoot him. He was a businessman, a liberal businessman, and the guy who actually killed him in Parliament was a Greek communist. Mm-hmm. So you know this brings us back to that topic, a topic that I've mentioned before, maybe not on your show, but I have mentioned it from time to time on my website, that liberalism is the brother of communism. Liberalism leads to communism, and those two things come together. And it shouldn't be a surprise, because, you know, Jews are behind communism and Jews are behind liberalism. And it should not be a surprise that whenever the white man starts getting something together, that guess who doesn't like it? That suddenly liberals and communists and Jews are all together busy bashing the white man. Mm-hmm. In the case of Verwoerd, it is a bit more subtle. It wasn't just Verwoerd alone. Verwoerd was there was a struggle inside South Africa for, among the whites, for control of the politics. Before Verwoerd, there was General Jan Smuts, who was a big buddy of Churchill. And Jan Smuts was basically a liberal of his day. And guess what? He was totally cozy with Zionists and all kinds of Jews. He even played a big role in the creation of Israel. And Jan Smuts was like the white Nelson Mandela of his day. And he was the liberal. And so these Boers and Afrikaners, recovering from the Anglo-Boer War, they actually created a new political party called the National Party. And they were the nationalists of their time. And they fought and defeated these Jewish liberals led by Jan Smuts. They defeated them in 1948. And that is when apartheid started. But apartheid was struggling a bit in the first years. And there were other guys who started apartheid, but Verwoerd was the guy who really made it happen. And he did it on a big scale. You know, Verwoerd resettled millions of blacks. Eh? He moved people around big time. He was doing big scale stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's fascinating kind of history that, you know, again, not a lot of people know about this man, really, you know. He's been kind of pushed under the carpet.
Totally.
Yeah. And that's just... Yeah, I knew a bit about him, and I knew he did stand up to the Jews a bit, but I didn't know it was that much, you know what I mean? And I knew he called out the Jewish bankers and all that. I knew about that side of things, but his whole, the system I kind of implemented was really very much based on National Socialism. It really was, when I think about it now, and what you say in your video, you can see it exactly. What he was talking about.
Yes.
Of course, he had to go. You know, there's no way they could allow him in again. And then you could see where the British and the Americans tried to disown him and all the rest of it. That's when it all started. That's when the rot started to set in, because they said, "Oh, we can't allow this." So, he was obviously seen like as the, you know, oh, he's kind of a bad guy, and you know, he's given a bad name all across the world, and you know. Sadly, after that, you know, things went downhill, really, would you say, Jan, after he was killed? But do you think that's when the rot set in?
Most definitely. Breiser, I knew President P.W. Buerta. Mm-hmm. President P.W. Buerta was probably our last genuine leader. And I visited him at his house in 2006. And P.W. Buerta told me face to face, he said to me that Verwoerd was the greatest guy that we had in South Africa. And he looked up to Verwoerd big time. Yeah. And he told me that the loss of Verwoerd was the greatest loss white South Africa ever had. And he said to me that from there onwards, you know, things were never the same again. He himself tried in his last years, in most of the time that he was around, and as he himself rose to power until he became president, P.W. Buerta told me that, you know, he was trying to prepare South Africa to fight, etc. And I can tell you that P.W. Buerta was the last genuine leader, and he was trying to follow in the footsteps of Verwoerd as best he could. Mm-hmm. But Verwoerd really must be seen as a giant, a South African intellectual giant, and a man of firmness and standing, the likes of which South Africa had never had before. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he really was our Hitler. And mm-hmm. and with that same firm determination, and also too clever to be fooled. Verwoerd was too clever to be taken in by tricks and nonsense, in the same way that Hitler was too clever to be fooled by all kinds of junk, you know. And the only way out is to kill them. That's the end of it. In the case of Hitler, you had to destroy Germany in order to destroy Hitler. In the case of Verwoerd, they were able to actually kill him outright, like they killed JFK. But a fantastic man. And of course, the reason he's written out of all kinds of everything is Jews don't want any mention of him. They don't want any mention of him because they hate him. They hate him. He's the nastiest thing that they've ever come across in South Africa, because he's the only white man to stand up and call them out. And that's why they hate him to death.
Yeah. Do you think, like, if, you know, if he wasn't assassinated, we would be in a different place now? I wonder. I mean, he was born, I'm just looking at here, he was born in 1901, so he died 66 when he was assassinated, so he was just 65 years old, really. You know, he's pretty much in his prime, really, as a politician. That's when they, you know, they do their thing, you know, they're ready, they're there. That's you know, at that age, these guys have been around the block a bit and they know what they're doing. And I'm just wondering that if he wasn't assassinated, he could have gone on for quite a bit more and he could have changed the course a bit, couldn't he?
Absolutely. And you know, if you go and you look closely at South Africa, in less than 10 years after his death, they were already fooling the next prime minister, Forster, who took over after Verwoerd. Forster was totally fooled by the Jew Kissinger. Forster started to fall for ideas like detente and all this other kind of crap. You know, a guy like Forster just wasn't of the intellectual caliber and the strength of character to resist, you know, these kinds of tricks. He just wasn't up to it. So, you know, if Verwoerd had been around, he would have told them, you know, go take a hike. But you know, that's the thing, you know. And I must tell you that the death of Verwoerd definitely impacted the rest of the whites in Southern Africa, because I regard Verwoerd as the greatest of the white leaders ever, and Ian Smith is maybe the second greatest. And if those two had been allowed, if they were dealing with each other and getting along well with each other. In fact, Ian Smith, I believe, was the only politician, the only foreign dignitary who came to Verwoerd's funeral. I can only imagine if Verwoerd and Ian Smith had been around in the 70s and could have been cooperating. You know, Verwoerd was so decisive. I must tell you, let me tell you how Verwoerd saved the whites of South Africa. You know, South Africa was a dominion, a British dominion like Canada. And Britain had a hell of a lot of say in all the affairs of South Africa. And when Macmillan from Britain came to Cape Town and he gave that Winds of Change speech, where he basically said, you know, it's the end of the white man in Africa, in a nutshell, that's what he was basically saying. Verwoerd looked at that, and within a year, Verwoerd went and withdrew South Africa from the Commonwealth. And Verwoerd took a lot of heat for that. He withdrew South Africa from the Commonwealth, and he turned South Africa into a republic. Now, the thing that people don't grasp is that by doing that, he quickly and decisively got South Africa away from British control. Because if he had not done that, Britain was in a position where Britain could have started saying to the whites of South Africa, you need to change your policies. You have to start handing over your country to the blacks. And that is what, you know, they did that to Rhodesia just a few years later. And that's when the Rhodesians rebelled. But if Verwoerd hadn't made South Africa independent, then Britain could have started meddling in the internal affairs of South Africa. And so my personal view is that by doing what he did, he bought the whites of South Africa 34 years of white rule.
Yeah.
And I think that is the most marvelous thing that he did. He moved with tremendous speed and immediately got South Africa the hell away from Britain after that Winds of Change speech. And he also even answered Macmillan, because Macmillan kind of blindsided him in Parliament. And so he said that he's not going to answer him there and then, but he will reply to him. And he did reply later. He gave a speech and he said in essence the following. He said that if you're going to do something right for the black man, then you must make sure that you don't make something if you're gonna do something honest good for the black man, you must see to it that you don't disadvantage the white man. If you're going to do justice to the black man, you know, remember to also do some justice to the white man. Don't do an injustice to the white man. And so Favut fought back and spoke like that, you know. Mm-hmm. And you know, that is the strength of character of Favut. He mm-hmm. stood up for his own race. And mm-hmm. nobody else had the balls to say things like that, you know. Only Ian Smith was the only other guy, you know, the Rhodesian.
Yeah, yeah.
Was the only other guy to also stand up and say his damn thing, you know.
What are the politicians you see that actually do that now, you know, or even back in the day? None. They don't stand up for their people at all. They stand up for the corporations and the vested interests and the Jews. That's what they do. All of them.
Absolutely.
Sold out. So these people are traitors as far as I'm concerned because, you know, they're supposed to be elected by the people to represent us and our interests and what we want. And it's totally ignored. So there we go.
Absolutely. Totally, Bryce.
When you finish that whole series, you're obviously going to be putting more up on your website. So I urge people just go to Jan's website and have a look at those videos. The one that I watched, I think, was the third in the series, but that was 3 hours long. But it's well worth watching. There's a lot of great information there that Jan put together. You put a lot of time and effort into that one, Jan, because that's fascinating stuff. I was like, wow, that's incredible, you know. So we're heading into the last, say, 15 minutes, John. We can go over a bit. You want to bring this up quickly. You've been having your own troubles there yourself, you know, as I said at the beginning of the show, what's happening with Graham. Similar type of things have been happening to you, but it's ongoing with you at the moment, so you have to be careful what you say. So tell us what you want to say, you know, what you're comfortable with. And tell us what's been happening.
Okay. Well, I had not been doing anything with the local Jews. I hardly ever mentioned them on my websites. And last year in July, I suddenly had this car appear at my gate. And Bryzer, I looked at this and I thought to myself, this is a little bit strange. Why is this white car at my gate? And a black man gets out, tall black man gets out. And I go and I'm just looking at this and I'm saying, something's wrong here. This is weird. But nothing could prepare me for what was about to happen. And this black man is there and I go and I greet him and I say, hello, who are you? You know, why are you here? And out of his mouth comes, I'm here on police business. And it turns out that somebody had laid a charge of crimen injuria, which is a kind of insult crime, crimen injuria against me. So he says to me, can you come
to
the...
It's like defamation, isn't it? Some kind of defamation type of thing, isn't it? Something similar to that.
Almost like that, but it's more an insult than insult and a fear type of a thing than a valid thing. Mm-hmm. So he says to me, can you come to the police station tomorrow? And I say to him, you know, can we talk here? He says, yeah, no problem. So I open the gate. He comes into my property. We sit down and I say to him, so what is this about? Because he's got a file with him. And he says to me, well, this person has laid a charge against you. This Jewish person has laid a charge against you. And I say to him, but I don't know this person. How can I commit a crime against somebody I don't know? I've never interacted with this person. I don't know this person. How could I commit a crime? Well, it turns out that there's a bunch of screenshots from my website. And this person says that, you know, I've committed a crime against her. So anyway, this was kind of freaky. And he said to me that he wants a statement from me and that he will then later forward this to the state prosecutor. And, you know, then the state prosecutor will decide whether to prosecute me. Anyway, as time goes by, nothing happens. And I go and I publish on my website I publish a little story and I say, this person, this name, this Jewish person has laid a charge against me. Well, about 2 months later, I get three cops pitching up at my house. This time with a big, fat, freaking wad of paper. And they say that I'm being charged with harassment. I'm now apparently busy harassing the person whom I don't know and have never met. I'm apparently harassing that person, and I need to go to court in November. So that was a big shock, and that was a big, thick, freaking document. Anyway, I go to court, and somebody tells me that, look, what you can do is just go to the court and just get a postponement so that you can try and get an attorney. All the time, in the meantime, I have been trying to get an attorney, and I can't get a fucking attorney who will do anything in a case against Jews. So I'm battling my ass off. I've already been looking for months, and it's not working. So anyway, what happens is I go to court, and I say to the magistrate who is a white man at that point, the magistrates change. There can be any race, any color, but it happens that it's a white man. And the white man says, I say to him, I've never been in court before, and I would like a postponement so I can get some legal advice. He says, that's in order. That's fine. Next thing I know, the Jewish attorney is just busy with a whole bunch of stuff that he's busy throwing at the magistrate, yet another pile of documents. And the next thing is I find myself being given a temporary a protection order is issued, and I'm told that I have to remove some stuff from my website within 48 hours or I will be arrested. So that weekend was a nasty weekend, as I'm busy deleting stuff off my website, that apparently, and Bryza, apparently this person's life is in danger. I'm not joking with you, man.
Yeah.
I'm not joking with you. The court discussions are freaky. It's about the fact that this person could be killed at any time. And yeah. and the only solution is to remove stuff from my website.
Yeah.
So anyway,
the website are suddenly now a major threat to somebody's life. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yes. So someone's about to die if this stuff is not removed from the website. So anyway, that was the beginning of my nightmare. The good news was that the case was postponed for 4 months. That was a piece, that was a stroke of luck, that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that meant that I was to appear in court on the 13th of March. And on the 13th of March, the proper hearing was going to take place. Finally, after months and months of struggle, and make no mistake, Bryza, I was already looking for an attorney in July. Already, I was looking for an attorney. So the crimen injuria never went anywhere because it was so bogus that not even the state would run with it. But I anyway was hunting for an attorney. Bryza, it took me fucking months. And by the time I got to March, I finally had an attorney. And I went into court, and another strange thing happened. While we were in court, there was a fucking power outage. South Africa was going through a bunch of power outages. We were being hit with power outages every day. There was a fucking power outage. The computers and the recording equipment couldn't function. And so it was postponed for another 5 weeks.
Divine intervention there, maybe, somewhere, you know.
I must tell you that also wasn't a bad thing. So I'm actually due in court on the 19th, on the 19th of April. And right. I'm going to leave it at that because they also tried other things. I will just mention this, that prior to appearing in court, they also tried to have a warrant issued for my arrest.
Okay.
Because apparently I'd not deleted enough stuff, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And Bryza, that's as much as I'm going to say now, but Bryza, the little bit that I've told you is mm-hmm. just the tip of the iceberg, my friend. If I'm able to tell you the full story of all the fucking things that went on and the things I've seen and learned, you will fall on your fucking back when I tell you all the shit that's gone down. Right. It's been an absolute nightmare.
Yeah. Well, we look forward to that, and we wish you all the best in that. You know, and, you know, I said, you know, you've lawyered up and whatever, and that's fine. People make their own decisions. But just by asking a simple question, is it a civil or criminal matter? I'm just saying that you reserve all rights and pretty much don't say anything else. It kind of, that throws a major spanner in the works for them because they just don't know how to deal with you, you know. You know, there's different ways of doing it, and I'm not the one to try and tell people what they should do. I haven't gone through this type of thing myself, so I can't say it. Now, Graham is going to be in that situation, and I have a good idea what Graham's going to be doing. But it's a similar type of thing, isn't it? Yeah, there's Graham who put out a video, Hoax Train, which went viral all over, you know, there's that
yes.
viral all over the place, right? And then he was hauled in and he was interrogated for 9 hours and he walked out and eventually they gave him back his equipment after 2 years. And he kind of poked the bear again a bit and on the Facebook. And I think that's probably what caused them to come around again and just hassle him. And they're just, this is what they do. And this is this campaign against anti-Semitism, the CAA, who are hassling Alison Chablow and many other, even like David Icke and others like that, Gilad Atzmon, who's a Jew as well. They're going after all these people who dare to speak out. And really coming after them with everything. And who are these people? Who are these people who can come in and literally employ the cops to come and harass you, drag you out of your home, and threaten you with all sorts of things? You know, now, something, this is not good.
Now, in my case, it's exactly the same thing. I've got a person, but this person is the face of the organization.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a whole organization behind this. And in South Africa, this organization, it's like the ADL of South Africa, and they are hunting down people of all races, by the way, mm-hmm. that they hunt them down, prosecute them, that they were delighted that they got a black guy jailed. Mm-hmm. A black guy has been thrown in jail, also for a crimen injuria, and mm-hmm. they were absolutely delighted. It took them 2 years to get him into jail, and mm-hmm. they're absolutely delighted. But they've been going after others. There was, prior to me, there was a white girl in Pretoria, an Afrikaans girl. Her name is Simone Kriel, and she also said something on Twitter about Hitler and the Jews. They immediately slapped her with a crimen injuria as well. It caused her some problems. They've been hunting people for years and years in South Africa. They're hunting Muslims, they're hunting blacks, and now they're hunting whites as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, finally whites are standing up and saying something, and bang, it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. And it's a definite campaign. It's not just one thing. It can be anything, and new things can come too. This is a nasty business.
They're using flawed logic and flawed legalities and whatever to do this. Okay, they're bringing people in under so-called you've hurt my feelings and stuff, or you're harassing me, and there's absolutely no evidence. So they're making a claim, and, you know, there's a maximum law. He who makes the claim has to provide the evidence, the proof of this, and they can't do it. So we have to keep challenging them on that. Where's your proof? Well, come on, show me the evidence that I've hurt somebody's feelings. Like, you know, the same thing with Graham there. They followed him in over five counts against the Public Order Act. Who was hurt by this? Who exactly? And show me the injured party. Who are they? Right? This is just a bunch of Jews, basically, who are just saying, you can't say that because we're Jews. You just can't say it. That's it.
In a nutshell, that's it. And like in my case, the solution to the problem is total censorship of me. They want my website down. They want everything of mine destroyed. Everything. They said that they want all my social media accounts deleted. If you look at what their demand is basically shut down History Reviewed and everything else and shut your mouth forever. That's basically what they want.
Yeah.
That in a nutshell is it. It's like total censorship. You're not allowed to talk about Jews. End of story. Nothing you say is allowed.
That's why it's so important that we keep pushing back against this, you know. And we'll see how things go with you, Jan, and obviously we'll see how things go with Graham. You know, they're really pushing this crap on us, and we're going to push back. We're not giving in here. And I'll just say, I'm sure the Cornwall police are listening at the moment. I'd say, but shame on you and the uniform and the office that you hold by doing this, you know. Just leave the man alone, for God's sake. You've got rapists and murderers and everything going all around the place. You've got a corrupt government who are imposing all these lockdown measures and everything. Go after them, will you, for Christ's sake, and leave us alone. That's what I would say.
Well, I totally agree with you. And I mean, I'm in touch with Alison Chablot a lot. And good God, the things that they throw at Alison Chablot, they've been chucking a new case against her. Yeah. Oh, I mean, the stuff that they're throwing at her is fucking scary. I mean, if she loses her case, she could be sitting with a 7-year jail sentence. How that woman does it, I just don't fucking know. It's really crazy. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's like the slightest thing you say. Mm-hmm. There is no place for the white man. I'm telling you, Breiser, whites had better learn fast. Stick together, fight together, and have a unified front. And if we don't fucking learn that, we're finished. We're going to be finished.
We have to put aside all our little petty differences over this, that, and the other. I mean, they're coming after us now, right? They really are coming after us. And we have to put aside these petty differences. We've got to stand together because, you know, if we don't, we're done pretty much, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. Breiser. You know, this thing of I'm British, you're South African, he's French, that guy's gonna, all that fucking crap must go out the window. There's only one thing left. Yeah. There's only one thing left, and that's we're white. And all whites must stick together. And if we don't do that, we're fucked. We're totally fucked.
We're gone. Okay, Jan, we'll call it a night on that. Great to talk with you again, and we'll get you on again. Later down the line, you know, after a court case and whatever, and we'll talk more about Vervoort as well. You know, so lots of interesting things happening there.
So look out down there and
stay strong. Don't let the bastards grind you down. You know, just keep soldiering on. You know, and your website is historyreview.com. Go check it out, folks. Lots of good articles there, and check out his videos there about Henrik Vervoort. Very interesting stuff. For people who are interested in a bit of history there. Very recent history, by the way, but very, very interesting. So have a look at that. So thank you, Jan. And thanks, everyone, for listening. And as I said, if you want to contact Graham, the Graham Hart Show at mail.com, mail.com, send him some messages of support. I'm sure you really appreciate that. You know, as I said, he's taken himself offline now. He's just concentrating on his family. And he has to deal with what's coming ahead. So we leave him at that and we wish him the best, you know. And obviously, I'm in touch with him anyway, so I'll keep you updated on what's going on there. So until then, folks, we'll be back to you again same time next week. And we'll finish the show with the usual, the going now. So take care. Good night, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Good night.
Hey, Hachaim.
What?
I think the Goyim know.
That's ridiculous. The Goyim don't know.
I think they know, man.
My websites, historyreview.com, africancrisis.info, and white-shop.biz. This is my attempt to try and do some Jew-free trading and experimenting with the next level of stuff. So, thank you very much for listening. We'll be chatting again soon. Take care of yourselves.